following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Pulse Gamecast episode 13. As usual, I'm Greatall.
And I'm Jason.
Today's record date is February 11th, 2014. And as usual, it's 8 p.m. Eastern. Let's get into it, Jay. What's been keeping you busy this week?
Oh, Raptors told on me yet again, and MechWarrior Online has kept me busy. I don't know if it's frustration or just the fact that I'm getting pwned so often, but I just keep going back for the beatdown. I'm in a Orion Protector, which is one of those pay-to-win mechs, but I like it. I like the color scheme. I've always been a big fan of Kerensky and the Orion, and so that's the one I chose. I've been up and down. It's all of its different configurations, and I like it. It's a little ponderous. It doesn't do any one thing great, and it doesn't do any one thing bad, so it's kind of my all-around go-to mech when I'm messing around. But I've got a couple others. You know, I've got a Raven and a Shadowhawk, and I actually enjoy playing the Shadowhawk more, being a medium mech and a little bit more mobile. It tends to last a little bit longer. So you're asking, well, then why did you buy the Protector? I don't know, it just looked cool. So I bought that, and I was digging through some old minis and found my Legion of the Damned half-finished army there. So I started playing with that again, since it's easy to paint. I just, you know, start with black base coat and work up from there. And I also, in that same box, found my old Ogre army for Warhammer Fantasy, which I have yet to even put together, much less paint. So that's about it. What about you?
Let's see. I've actually been jumping back into the Secret World. I said that the last show. Finally ground out my Illuminati Grifter deck, and yesterday finished the storyline in Egypt. That was a grind. I've restarted Batman Arkham Origins, and I have a friend who plays Torchlight 2, so I downloaded that to check it out. I've played the first one, and it was okay. I've also played a lot of Diablo. You know, if you're familiar with Torchlight, some guys from Blizzard left, and you know, they left the Diablo dev team, and they started Torchlight. So it's very Diablo-esque, but it's fun. It's got some neat little things to it. It looks good for what it is, and so it's pretty fun. Also, this past weekend, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in it, but I have been invited to the ESO, the Elder Scrolls Online beta. I received my invite around the second beta round, so I actually haven't played in the last two, but this time I wanted to kind of jump in because they were having a, as they called it, you know, let's set a world record for number of people logging in. I guess they were trying to get the largest amount of people in a closed beta. I don't know if they set the record or whatever, but so I did that some this weekend. I didn't play a whole lot of that because I didn't want to suffer, you know, as they call it, the beta burnout.
Yeah.
But and then of course the NDA is still in effect, but they have lightened it a little bit, so I can't tell you specifics of the game except to say it is beautiful, and I don't think I can even run. I know I can't run ultra settings on the graphics, but with my video card, a GeForce GTX 650, I can run about, what is it, 1920 by
1080?
1600 by 1280. God, I can't even remember. Anyways, it's kind of up there, but it's not the best. And it still looks great. The game is fun. Trying to think of what I can say.
They're stress testing, it sounds like.
Yeah, they are stress testing. The last beta, they said you can play anything you want, and this beta was the same way. Before, they've kind of locked you into one or two races and classes just to essentially get on there and test the servers. But now, you can play everything except for an Imperial. That's That's not really violating the NDA because there's been big controversy in the past couple weeks about pre-orders, and the Imperial race is only available to those who pre-order. So,
yeah, I saw that. If you buy the Imperial Edition, I believe is what it's called.
Yeah, the Imperial Edition, and there's even rumors. I don't quite understand it myself. It's full of so much Polita speak. But the Adventurer's Pack, I think, is what they call it. If you get that, that's supposed to include the Imperial race as well.
Yeah, you can play all races out of the gate, right?
Yeah. All races. Well, in the Imperial, you can play on any faction because your races are limited to your faction that you choose. And there again, that's been from day one. That's not NDA violation, so calm down, trolls. My little bit of time I spent in the game, I think I did probably 5 quests. The rest of the time, I just spent running around. Just from area to area. If you've played Skyrim, you know what I'm talking about. I murdered countless butterflies. I mined.
Murderer.
Yeah, right. Did a lot of mining, wood chopping, and just checking the thing out. It's a beautiful game. I think if you've enjoyed any of the Elder Scrolls, you'll definitely enjoy this. I've got a quick question, Jay, about your Legion of the Damned.
Sure.
So, you, of course, base coat black.
Of course.
And I'm assuming matte black?
Yes, matte.
How do you do the flames?
I restart. I do the slow way by repainting a white coat over wherever I'm going to do the flames, like on the knee pad or whatever. And then from there, I go from white to yellow, and then I do an orange and a red, and then I wash the entire thing with a yellow ink.
Oh, very cool. Everyone does it differently. I've even seen guys specially print decals, flame decals, just to give it, you know, they're not very good painters, so they spend the time and money elsewhere.
I'm not either, but I like to fake it.
Right.
Let me throw a quick out here in case one of my old mentors is listening to this. I don't think he is, but just in case. Jim Butcher, he was, and not the Jim Butcher, the author. This would be Jim Butcher from Ford and 27th Field Artillery in Germany. He actually went to work for Games Workshop LA. And he was my mentor. He taught me in Germany how to paint, and we went to Eurocon together and quite a few things. And he was a master painter when I met him, but he was just one of those people, you know, you get the rare opportunity to meet someone who's great and they don't know it yet.
Right.
And like you, Gray, when I met you. So later, when you're a broadcaster, I want you to rerun this podcast. But later, I just to let you know, I met Jim Butcher. He's a really wonderful guy. He might go by Mike Butcher now because his first name was Michael. But he was Mike Butcher when I met him, and then I saw that he went by Jay Butcher for a little while, and, you know, Michael James. But the point being is Mike Butcher is a wonderful artist, and he taught me how to do the painting, and I wanted to say, in case he's listening, thank you. Anything that I do now that's worth the crap is because of you, buddy.
Cool. You know, man, that's now the wonders of the interwebs. You should look him up.
Yeah, I should, actually. Now, interesting,
should.
Right? Speaking of beautiful games, I think you got something on Bioshock this week?
Yeah, Bioshock Infinite Burial at Sea Episode 2. They've finally given us a release date, and it's March 25th. I've talked about this on a previous show. This is the DLC for Bioshock Infinite, where you return to Rapture. This is not a spoiler, but in the Episode 1, you play as Booker. In Episode 2, you play as Elizabeth. So... you can check out the video at BioshockInfinite.com. It is full of spoilers if you haven't played Bioshock Infinite or Burial at Sea Episode 1, so be forewarned.
Those are some good prices. They're running on that stuff on Steam pretty regularly, too. So,
yeah, Steam has it, even Amazon, if you want to digitally download the game, Bioshock Infinite. I think right now, honestly, it's running $30 maybe. So
that's a good price.
It is. I paid full price because I'm such a fan. I wanted it day one. You know, standard $60 for PlayStation, but it was worth it for me.
There you go.
Alrighty. Moving on. DDO. I think this is the first time, maybe the second time we've talked about DDO. Dungeons & Dragons Online. Horrible game in my opinion.
Yep,
but
same here.
But newsworthy this week because they are teaming up with Ed Greenwood, who is the creator of the Forgotten Realms setting.
Dad, no!
Dude,
that's slumming to me.
It is, but, you know, he's supporting the brand, so...
Yeah,
so
I know.
Whatever.
DDO is like Diablo and Dragons Online is what it should be, because it's like an over-the-shoulder, you know, and...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can zoom in, but it's meant to be played from a top-down perspective, and... anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So what they're doing with Ed is they are recreating his AD&D 2nd Edition module, The Haunted Halls of the Evening Star. They are recreating that in DDO in celebration of this year being Dungeons & Dragons' 40th anniversary. This module, The Haunted Halls, if you're an old-school gamer, you may know it. This is the dungeon that the Knights of Mithranor got, where they got their start. Ed put out a series of novels about the knights, and they're an adventuring group. They actually get a writ from the King of Cormyr, I believe it is, and his lascivious bisexual queen wife who just bangs everybody while the king watches. I was actually very surprised by those novels. But that's what it is. They're going to recreate the Haunted Halls of the Evening Star dungeon, where you and your party will be able to travel in the footsteps of the Knights of Mithranor.
And then you'll be able to retravel it again. It's time with a higher level party. Would you like to play it again? This time at a higher level party.
Right. Let's move on. Jay, tell us about Witcher.
Well, actually, I was digging around, and you know, we do a lot of research here, and we pile on with other people's research. And I was digging on to MMORPG.com, and they have a list of the most anticipated games of 2014. And some of these I knew about, and a bunch of them I didn't, actually. I'll go ahead and put the link in the show notes for later, but Witcher 3 is supposed to be coming out here for, I think, first quarter 2014. And believe it or not, Dragon Age Inquisition is actually supposed to be out before the summer. And I was like, no, I didn't know BioWare was going to go back that fast. I figured it for another year, you know, with everything that they're doing on the front with Star Wars Online. I think they got their hands busy on two other projects, one of which we'll talk about later sometime. I'll tell you about it later. That's actually in beta. But they've got their fingers in a lot of things, but I didn't think Dragon Age Inquisition was going to be out so soon. But yeah, it's coming out soon. And then a couple of more games that you might be interested in. The reason I put Witcher 3 on there is, aren't you a Witcher player? Weren't you like really big into Witcher?
Yeah, I played the second one. I never played the first one.
I
never finished the second one. I should say that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think that was kind of a Battle at Krondor-esque to me, and that's why I never finished. I know it was a first person, you know, basically not a shooter, but you know what I mean. First person player, I guess. And
which one?
Original.
Krondor? The original. Okay.
Yeah, the original and Krondor. And so I never played 2, but when I saw 3 and the graphics on 3, I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. They've got some I guess they've really bumped up the engine. I don't know if they're using CryEngine on that or not, but they bumped up the blooms and the surface reflections and stuff like that. It's really a beautiful engine. I'll have to dig around and find out what they're using. But again, Dragon Age Inquisition also coming up, and you know, BioWare's had, what, 2 hits in a row, plus all the DLC and all the add-ons? Oh my god. So we got a lot booking for that, and the Inquisition, I believe, let's just let people go take a look. I don't want to interrupt my super opinion in there. And then also, do you remember Torment? What was it called? Planescape. Yeah.
I never played that one. I played all the others, the 2, the Ravenloft, the Dragonlance, but I didn't play Planescape.
And it was really weird. I mean, it was like the Dungeons & Dragons Planescape didn't really do that well as an add-on to Dungeons & Dragons book-wise, you know, hard copy. But if you take a look, it did incredible as a game in comparison to how it did as a book series. So here they are coming back with the spiritual successor, Tides of Tunara, and they'll show you some links to that, and also the teaser trailer for it. And again, beautiful. And it's one of those things where you're like, okay, you're kind of surprised, really. It's one of those games where you're like, you've read the books, it was okay, and then you see the game come out or the movie come out, and then they just totally blow away the original content with what this, you know, development studio has done with what they had in their hands, you know?
Okay.
So I totally expect this, and this is just me tossing this out. I looked at the trailer. I totally expect this to do very, very well. Actually, And finally, Mass Effect 4 is an iffy this year. They're not even really sure if it's going to make it. How do you feel about that? I know you're a big Mass Effect fan.
I am. I don't think it'll happen this year because of all of the crap with Mass Effect 3. And there again, that wasn't gameplay. That was just story. I think they're probably going to really take their time and make sure everything's perfect.
You're talking about all the genderbender stuff?
No. The story with the ending of Mass Effect 3. I think they're going to really pull back, make sure their story is good, no loose ends and all that. I would be extremely hopeful and excited, but I would be really surprised if it shows up this year.
And there you go. But like I said, there's a list out there of the most wanted games of 2014, the ones they expect to make it, the ones that are not going to, they don't think, and they did a pretty good job on that. I like to toss stuff other people's way when they do good work, and I spent quite a long time on that article, which is something I don't normally do, so like I said, I'll list that up there. Also, have we talked about WildStar yet?
Go ahead.
Oh my God, you're the huge WildStar fan. Have you seen this? Have you seen this promo video?
I did. I watched it. Yeah.
Tell us about it. Go ahead, because I like hearing you talk about it.
Well, last week I spoke about a little teaser thing they had on their website with the adventure. It said like, "Are you ready for adventure?" And I said, "I don't know if it was going to be a video. I didn't know if it was going to be something in game or a choose your own adventure like an AGR, the alternate or ARG, alternate reality game." They did post the video today. 2:11 is when they were going to pop it out. You need to go check this out. If you've watched any of the WildStar videos, it's just like the rest. It's crazy. It's wild. It's funny. Also informative. So what it looks like is in game, you and your party are going to be able to go up to the caretaker. Is that what he's called?
Yeah, caretaker.
Okay, you'll be able to go up to the caretaker and enter adventures. He will. Oh my God, dude! Just total brain fart. Virtual instance. Reality. There we go.
I was like instance. Is that
instance? Hey guys, Great All here. You have probably noticed how things got a little weird while we were recording the show. My TeamSpeak just absolutely crapped out on me. So that's why, so that's why I'm telling you this. And so it took a little finagling, a little editing. That's why the conversations kind of drop and don't quite pick up in the same place. We were actually down for about 10 minutes. I don't know what happened to TeamSpeak, but that's why the conversation that starts here in a second is weird. So, sorry, technology, you gotta love it. Thanks a lot.
Or do you want to just go on straight to TSW?
No, it's fine. Go ahead and talk some more about WildStar.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I liked how they do their content release. It's really tongue-in-cheek, you know? And that's exceptional to me when a company can, you know, produce a high quality game like they're producing and still produce it with a "hey, watch us laugh at ourselves" kind of face, you know?
Right. Have you watched any of the other dev speak videos? I mean, the class reveals or anything at all?
No, I watched the very first one that you showed to me, and I haven't watched any since then. This is the only other one that I only watched about half of this one because I was trying to move on to the TSW stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was hilarious what I did watch. Well, it was funny what I did watch.
Yeah, yeah. No, you need to really watch like the two videos where they show the factions, the kind of the introduction to the factions. Those are funny. Those are really good.
Awesome.
Alrighty, so let's move on. You have some Secret World news for us.
Well, we both do, kind of. I think we both played through this. Did you do the portal with us?
Uh-uh, I did not.
You weren't there when it fell?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, it was awesome. The servers did not crash this time. We were there at the, for those of you who aren't familiar, TSW uses a transport system called a Agartha, the Living World Tree, where you go inside of it and then you jump to a portal to go to a different part of the world, a different instance of the world. And in that, the way they've been progressing their story on the march to Tokyo is they've been having the filth pop into these portals and kind of block them. And our job as protectors of Agartha, the World Tree, the bee people, whatever you want to call us, we go to these filthy portals and we do missions. Basically, you come to a little box, it gives you a mission, you go collect stuff, craft, and then come back and drop it back in the box. Well, the portal had just about fallen from the last one. And when a portal falls, it allows you to have access to a new instance, a new raid, a new adventure, a little mini adventure. So we were there when this last one fell, because it was really interesting, because it was almost instantly the next portal. Because what happens is one portal falls and then another portal pops up, because it's supposed to be a progression into Tokyo, right?
Right.
So we were there, and I happened to get on TeamSpeak, and Tita and Xander and a whole bunch of the people from the Veil, Beyond the Veil, were like, Jason, get online. The portal's about to fall. I was like, okay. So I ran over there, jumped down to the proper portal, stood there, and then all of a sudden, boom, the Guardian walked up, and there was a big explosion. Then he starts walking off, and then the lag hit. Oh, my God. I mean, I saw like four people, and they were all naked. And that was it. And then everybody wanted to follow the Guardian to the next portal, right? Because that's what he does. He stands up and he moves over to the next portal because the filth tries to invade the next portal. Well, by the time I logged in after I saw four people and couldn't do anything, I was like, okay, that's it. So I logged out. I logged back in about an hour later. And the thing is there's normally, I think, six barrels. Am I right on that?
I think, I don't even know, to be honest with you. I've never done a filth event.
Yeah, it's like six barrels. So let's just say there's six barrels. And each barrel is supposed to be like 1,000 units of whatever it is that they require you to craft, right? Not even an hour later, the first three barrels were completely filled up. Now, in comparison, so people understand, it took us weeks to get the first two barrels filled up on the first event. You know, literally, it took us weeks to do the the first three barrels? It took us like almost 2 weeks. So not even an hour into it, people had been saving one of the elements called water, you know? And any perfect rune, which is a collection of, you create a rune, four runes create the next level higher rune, and four of those runes create the next level higher to get what's called a perfect or a pure. So it was one pure water and one pure rune of any type, and you could, you know, craft one of these units. The first three barrels, like, just disappears, like, boom, boom, boom. I was like, holy crap. So I call it the great waterfall of 2014, because it was water and any pure rune. And it's, from what I'm hearing, it's already available. We can now do a raid instance in that portal. I have not done the raid instance, but I was in with Beyond the Veil crew. And let me go ahead and give a shout out to them. Anybody who wants to have fun in Secret World, definitely check out our sister podcast, Beyond the Veil. They are all up in that junk. They have already started redoing the flat, and it's apparently Flappy's involved, and he's the great bird with the explosive diarrhea. He's a bad news bear on this one. So he's part of it. I have not done it, but they went ahead and released it, and they've got some videos. I'm going to go ahead and add a link here, but I have a feeling that Beyond the Veil is going to be doing something, so I want to go ahead and save a little space for that too. And you guys check back with us Thursday nights at 6 Central, I think. Is that correct?
I believe so,
yeah. Thursday nights at 6 Central. Check with the Beyond the Veil crew. They've got a chapter for every one of the factions, London, Seoul, and New York, and get in with them. They'll walk you through it, and most of them are always glad if they're not on a cooldown timer. They will walk you through it. Anybody's welcome. So, but definitely check out this new raid in the TSW. It was pretty awesome, and be there for whenever these filth events occur, because a lot of times this is the only time that you can get the shards and the what's that other stuff called? I look like donuts. I forgot what they're called. Anyway, the shards. The shards and the other piece, so that you can get the event stuff, like the Carapace armor that looks like Tron armor, basically. So check it out, and that's pretty cool.
Excellent. That'll wrap us up for the news this week. We're going to move on to geeky stuff. I actually didn't have anything, but Jay has loaded us up the bear, so wherever you want to start, Jay, go for it.
Okay. Well, the AMP Kickstarter. I just got off Secret World, so might as well jump right back on that. For those of you... Those of you who played role-playing games, there is, obviously, Chaosium's had, Cthulhu out forever. Mm-hmm. But that has a really Gaslight kind of flavor to it, and a lot of people like to play that area. I mean, you don't have to, but that's what it's really meant for. There was also, for a very little while, there was a game called Chill. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm. I have, yeah.
Okay, Chill was pretty good. I liked it. It had a pretty good system. It was mainly storytelling. It was, like, to me, one of the first fast, loose roll systems because it really depended on storytelling more so than the dice.
Okay.
But this one's called Amp, and it looks to be... basically, it looks to be a Secret World-esque role-playing system. Basically, in the 2015, superpowers start coming back into the world, and they're not all, you know, your standard superpowers. You have, you know, shape-shifting, portal powers, claws, really, really smart guys. So it's sort of like, I guess, if you crossed Marvel Universe, I guess. Remember the old Marvel Universe game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess if you crossed Marvel Universe with Secret World, that's what you're going to come out with. They've already hit their pledged goal of $6,000, so they're into their stretch goals of $7,741. They've got 215 backers and 24 days left. Now, that's pretty good. In 5 days, they hit their goal, and I think it's good to be realistic, you know?
Right.
But they're already 1,700 past their target, and they're into their stretch goals. Now, the bonus adventure is going to happen, obviously, and they're only $300 away from additional pre-generated characters. But when you get to 11,000, they have a comic year one at 11,000, which is going to be really cool, and I think that's awesome. They're also going to have a second bonus adventure at 12,000, and where was the good one? There it is. The third bonus adventure comes at 17. I fully expect them to make probably 13,000, hopefully, if they keep on the clip that they're on now. So hopefully they'll get way past their stretch goals, and I always like seeing a good RPG come into its own.
Right.
And from the artwork and looks like some of the rules that they're talking about, if you take a look at their brief PDF there that you can download, it looks like it's going to be worth, you know, getting your hands on. And the pledge backers of 250 or more get to create your own everything in the GM starter kit tier. That's pretty awesome. You know, if you wanted to have your hands on your input into a game system, this is the way to do it. $125 alone. There's 12 of 17 left of those. You get to be in the story, and that's pretty awesome. And your name will be used for an important NPC in the game world. So always good with the Kickstarters.
Yep. Actually, Jay, before you move on to the next one, I just thought of something. Just real quick, if you guys Kickstartered the repopulation, which Jay is... they have sent out the emails, and I just remembered this. They've sent out the emails. If you're a Kickstarter, log on, verify your account, verify your pledge, create your account with the repopulation, because now is the time to lock in your username, lock in the name that you want to appear in the credits if you Kickstarter that high, and also to reserve your character name. Great, all's already taken. Sorry. I just thought of that, so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was awesome, actually. Man, it's repopulation. See, you just completely drew me off key. That's just no.
Okay, well let me throw another little curveball at you. I sent a text to Jay this week asking him if he saw anything about Sony Online's little teaser about their tribute game to Star Wars Galaxies. Have you looked into that anymore by any chance?
No, I have not yet. Why?
So Smedley, John Smedley, president of, you know, Sony Online.
Smed.
Now, they've been talking about this for years, granted. But last week, he kind of sent out a tweet, and I don't remember the exact wording of the tweet, but it was essentially, what would you like to see in a Star Wars Galaxies sandbox-esque game? He just tweeted that. So, there have been some hints. There have been some... Well, there have been a lot of speculation. But they are working on an as-of-yet unnamed sandbox game that will be... it's definitely going to appeal to you Star Wars Galaxy fans, which I know you're a big one.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing. There's a couple little clues, he said, that it's not going to be Star Wars, obviously. And it won't be... I don't know if it's going to be... I think it'll be science fiction-y, but I don't think it's going to be futuristic. Because he said something about player-created bases. So there's definitely... That definitely rules out fantasy, in my opinion. Because, you know, in fantasy, yeah, you have towns or forts, not bases per se. And I think did I mention this on the last show? I don't remember. Bree at massively.com, she spoke with one of the devs, maybe even Smid, a while ago. And there's a rumor going around that it's going to be essentially a zombie apocalypse sandbox that'll be played exactly like Star Wars Galaxies. Now, I don't know if that's true. That's probably not. But, you know, sandboxy, player-created towns, player-driven economy.
I've always liked Smid, and he was one of the few people that gave games, game IP, I guess I should say, it's due. You know, he's like us. He's an old-school gamer, and he has the respect. So he's kind of like the godfather of Sony Online, and he came up through the ranks. I remember when he was just, you know, like junior partner, go and get the donuts guy, you know?
Yep.
So that being said, I think that if he's saying that we can find it and it's out, because I think he said if you wanted to find it, you know, if you wanted to find out what the IP is and what the game's going to be, it's out there. You just have to go look for it.
Mm.
That I think was his exact quote. And I was just like, oh, okay. So I think whatever it is, he's going to do it right, because if I'm not mistaken, he also said that Star Wars Galaxies was the one game he wished he could relaunch and do correctly.
Nice.
And, you know, I've always respected him for that, because I think it hurt him personally whenever Lucas came in and just turned it upside down, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's awesome.
What was that called? Was it NEG or something like that?
Which one?
In Star Wars Galaxies, when they redid it.
Yeah, the NGE. Yeah, new game.
NGE. Ah, that's it. That's it. The NGE.
You made me.
See, and I think that's when I tried Star Wars Galaxy. It was right after
that. Oh, I'm sorry,
bro. Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. And here's the thing. If you ever got one of the original Star Wars Galaxies CD cases, on the outside, it says, make your character your way, explore the galaxy. Now is the time for your story.
Hmm.
And yet let your saga, you know, continue.
Right.
So
right.
The whole point was, if you wanted to be a Wookiee, you know, slave girl dancer in a cantina, people would come and pay you to do that. Now, creepy as that sounds, it still was your complete possibility. And on the side, you could have been a fist brawler, you know, what do you call it? The Teras Kazi people, you know? And what you did was, they had all of these different skill trees that you could choose yourself. And Smedley is the guy who appreciated that, because he knew that the more control you give gamers, the more gamers it'll pull in. And I mean, like I said, that was one of the few times I'd ever seen since WoW or since EverQuest that the mainstream media admitted that there was a problem with people having this invading their lives. People with 3 and 5 accounts. I know, I had 2. At one point, I even had 3. It's 3 separate accounts that I was paying $14 or $15 a month to play. And each account had 2 or 3 characters. So, yeah, I was way deep into that. And I'm kind of, in a way, I'm kind of glad it's probably because I never would have gotten married, you know? But truthfully speaking, that it was an awesome game, and it wasn't just that it was Star Wars, it was the way it was done. So if Smedley's talking about recreating that, that man's sitting on a keg of dynamite. You should watch closely.
There you go.
All right, so Overland Journey, second shot here in the arm. For those people who, I always try to throw something in here on for people who can't be part of a group, you know. If you're listening to our podcast, it's not that you're lonely, but you've got some free time. So I'm sure you got friends, I'm sure you play with them, but the fact is if you have to be alone or you want to play a game and no one's available, solo Overland Journey tabletop RPG might be for you. It's a Kickstarter. And basically what you're looking at here is a game that you can sit down and play either with one other person, which not necessary, or by yourself. And really, it's a by yourself kind of game, a solo adventure kind of, I don't know, choose your own adventure for an adult. Is that what you want to call it?
Right.
But you're a character who has to go collect 5 of the most powerful weapons ever created. And you can either fight for or take over the king of this land, who's sick, apparently. The king's getting sick, and they're looking for a hero to go get these artifacts. Now, you can, like I said, at this point, either help the king or go after the king, and it's an open-ended adventure depending on what you want to do. Now, I do like the concepting. I'm a little critical of some of the names that they've used in here, because they've used real-world names in this game, but I think that they're doing it to try to draw in people who have, you know, don't understand the concepts behind RPGs, and to use real world names, like especially biblical names like Lazarus or Christ or things like that. Mm-hmm. You might be stepping on toes there and going a little bit far, but I see where you're going with it, because originally back in the first edition D&D days, they had some biblical names in there for some of their, you know, stuff. Gygax and them knew that they couldn't, you know, not draw down heat, but they had to have some type of, you know, something to be comparative to. So, but anyway, that being said, take a look at the Solo Overland Journey Tabletop RPG Kickstarter. It looks really good. Have you looked at it, Gray? Did you get a chance?
I read the little blurb on it. I did.
What did you think?
I think it's neat. It reminds me of, in second edition D&D, they actually had a group of solo adventures that they put out. And what these were, you as the player didn't read the adventure and follow along with it. You had a DM who ran it for you, but it was for only one person. And they were called the challenges. So Thief Challenge, Wizard Challenge. And they were very lightly run modules, but they had the full storyline and everything. From now, like you're saying, I'm gathering this is kind of a... I guess it kind of has to be like a choose-your-own-adventure, because otherwise you're going to be like, oh, I know not to go there because I'm reading the book. But I do like that they're showing miniatures, they're showing hex maps.
Yep.
I mean, it looks like it's going to be very involved. And if the picture of the adventure itself is accurate, it looks pretty stout. It's not like the challenges from second edition where they were maybe 20 pages. This looks like probably a 40, 50 page softcover book, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say easy about that. I was thinking more about 60 or 75, but yeah. And if you look at the pledge levels, obviously they, you know, you've got all your, with Kickstarter, they start off at the low level, which I expect people to do, you know, like $60 or $50 or $25. Mm-hmm. It's funny, if you go all the way up to $9.99 or more, which is, you know, wishful thinking, but still cool. there's only one of those, and it's one of a kind. It gets you the 1,000 page binder. That includes the entire game as copyrighted with the Library of Congress in 1987. Did you notice that number? In 1987. This is not a playable copy, as the cards and maps are not included, but it's the original 1987 game, which hit me. This game has been around, and I was kind of hoping you were going to get like, dang it, he didn't catch that. I was kind of thinking, this game's been around for a while. This is kind of the, I guess, the rendition of it. So, you know, I don't want to call it a revival of a game, but, you know, someone saw a game that was out there, wanted to go ahead and get some money on it and upgrade it to the modern world, I guess that's what you want to call it.
Yeah.
And went ahead and did this. So I wish people would go out and find these kind of things like what we do, you know. Definitely go check it out, because there's so much out there that you haven't seen, and the Kickstarter's a good way to do it, but it also gets you into, hey, look at this Kickstarter. Oh, this game's around since 87. And then you know, do a reversal, and by the time you realize it, you've gone and spent 2 hours online looking at something that's over 20 years old. So.
Right. I guess it is definitely a reimagining.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I guess the binder, I guess that's all the notes. Maybe.
Well,
notes, artwork, and
I've never had to submit anything to the Library of Congress, but something tells me that when you do, there's a lot of annotations. I mean,
yeah.
just my senior paper in college was over 300 pages after, you know, you did. So there you go.
Very citations. Cool. Very cool. Just now, I didn't see, and I don't know if you've found this out in the solo adventure. Do you pick a class to play, or is it? You know, you're
couldn't
the warrior.
Tell. Yeah, it looked as if you're because of the different things that you're looking for. You're looking for like the blood sword, the crystal cross or the emerald cross, the Lazarus robe, the seed of Eden or something like that. You're looking for different things, so it looks as if you're a singular class who can go out and do this. But I didn't dig that deep into it without spending a whole bunch more time in there, and that was what I was like, oh man, look at that. So but yeah, I thought it looked interesting. It looked like something that people would enjoy playing on their own, and again, you know, if you're looking for that kind of thing to fill that part of your life, you know, and you got to touch it and have your hands on it and not have it on the computer, this might be the route you want to go.
Neat.
All right. So, okay. And let me throw one last one at you since I'm dominating this particular portion.
Nope. It's all you.
All right. Army Builder. Did we talk about this?
Yes. Go ahead. No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Army Builder. Oh, my goodness. For those of you who play any type of tabletop gaming system, Army Builder should not be new words to you. Since computer PCs have, you know, I think I've been playing with Army Builder since 96 or 97, I guess. I don't know. I want to say that. But it was one of the first DOS-based, I think, and then later, when I say DOS, it was Windows-based, but it was Windows, you know, like 95, and it could, you know, and I think later on it ran in XP, so this is how old this is, but back whenever a lot of people were tracking Magic cards and stuff, Army Builder came out, and Army Builder was originally designed to help you keep track of your army points whenever you're playing a game like Warhammer Fantasy or Warhammer 40K, any of your large tabletop games, your Armada back then, and MechWarrior, believe it or not, and things like that. So what it is it's a framework computer program. You choose which rule set you're going to be playing in, and then it reconfigures itself so that the points, values, and goals for the game are listed. And then you build your army using that, and you can print it out. That was what it was designed to do, so that you'd have printouts, take them to the con, make sure that they're tournament legal, you know, things like that. So it was a really, really good system. They got a little greedy, I have to say, and I'm not being too, I try not to be too critical here, but it was worth it at 20, it was worth it at 30, but $40 annually is a little too much money.
Ooh, you know? Annually.
Yeah, they moved to a different, you remember when everybody was moving to the subscription-based in the gaming industry, you know, in 2000 and 2001?
Right.
They moved to. So we bought it, and they would, now, this being said, they consistently put out rules and games updates, so they're constantly working on the product. It's not, you buy the product once, and it's the same product forever. They're always building new rules. They cover all kinds of new, you know, game systems. And when you buy it, you buy it. It used to be you bought it for the entire set. Now you buy it, and I believe you can buy it for a specific rule set. Plus, they've added on to it now where, well, the company itself has branched out, and they have a like a Pathfinder Hero Builder application where you build a game, where you build characters, and it keeps track of games and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So they kind of branched out, but the basic Army Builder itself was a wonderful program. Now, why are you talking about this, Jason? Okay, well, for those of you who do tabletop games, you know I love MechWarrior, as previously mentioned. Love BattleTech. Well, I was digging around in BattleTech this morning, actually, because I was hurting, and I actually had to stay home from work. Ouch. But that being said, this morning I was digging around and I found Alpha Strike, which is apparently a new rule set for MechWarrior by Catalyst Games. Well, for BattleTech, for Catalyst Games. And it is, for those of you who are familiar with Warhammer 40K, there's the large rule set where you play with thousands of point armies. And then those take hours. I mean, hours and hours. Even saying, you know, 4 or 5 hours easy playing with a, you know, couple thousand point army. Well, they developed rules for shorter games because they knew people wanted to get in and out for, say, an hour. So they developed rules for a thing called Kill Team. Well, naturally, Army Builder said, well, okay, we'll support Kill Team for you. Now, technically, it kind of goes against what they wanted because the whole point was for it to be quick. You roll up a quick army, the points are there, and you play a quick game. Army Builder is one of those things that you sit there for hours and play with your different, you know, rule building makeups for your army. Different, you know, I want more heavies and less lights and more recon and more vehicles. Anyway, so they've come out with this Alpha Strike version of BattleTech Online. I thought with for BattleTech, sorry. A
little bit. On the brain. And,
yeah, big time. But this BattleTech has these new Alpha Strike rules, and it looks to be Kill Team for BattleTech. So would you like to play a game of BattleTech in just an hour? Now, BattleTech, everybody knows, is these, you know, two-story tall mechs that are like huge tanks with, you know, PP power, particle projection cannons and machine guns, flamethrowers, cannons, long-range missiles, short-range missiles, you name it. They've got it here. You know, extended-range lasers, pulse cannons, you name it. So, this game is very, very, let's build the mech, and then let's build the mech as part of a lance, which is a four-part unit, and then let's build the lances into a company and attack of each other. Well, that's a lot of time. So Catalyst looks like it said, okay, maybe the sweet spot for BattleTech nowadays is to make the miniatures in resin instead of metal, which will lower the price, and then make it an hour instead of four to play the game. And it looks as if this is what Alpha Strike is going to be. So I'm going to, again, put these in the show notes. But Catalyst Games is doing the Alpha Strike data package available for Army Builder, which allows you to do Alpha Strike using the Army Builder rules. And you don't have to have Army Builder. You can just go there and get the, you know, the Alpha Strike rules in PDF and play it. But I just thought that for the people who have the Army Builder add-on, who like BattleTech, this would be something interesting to check out.
Yeah, definitely, because, I mean, even BattleTech, I mean, you know, depending on how big you go, of course, can take a really long time.
Yeah, go big or go home, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, usually all the games I've been in, we always play, each person has, like, maybe a lance, if even that. And, you know, you get three or four of that, and, oh, man, it takes forever.
Oh, yeah, just the movements, they fall down.
Yeah,
you roll over,
yeah.
Boom.
Right. Piloting check.
Oh no! How far did you twist?
Exactly right. Now that seems like some cool stuff. Do you? They probably don't say in the information, but do you have any idea how often they update the software for the rules?
As far as I can tell, Army Builder is updated weekly. The Army Builder itself.
Wow.
Currently, they're on the 3.3 Army Builder. And like I said, it's if there's a new rule set that comes out, you can actually try it, and if you don't think that it is working the way it's supposed to, you can send in notes to the company, and they will go ahead and put someone on fixing it. And they also have dev teams that will contact you. And now, like I said, these are dedicated people. It's called Lone Wolf Development is the name of the company that did it. And for the how much money I've spent with them in the past, I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, here's your, I want to go ahead and support you guys, and I want to get y'all new business, but it was just expensive when their model changed.
Yeah.
It was just, and you can purchase it as a gift for someone, or you can extend your license is what they say. But the good part is they have 24/7 service, and I got to admit that when I had problems while I was covered, I emailed them, and not even an hour later, my problem was fixed. So.
Okay, good. Nice. So I guess if they're updating weekly, that probably includes errata.
Oh yeah, big
stuff
time.
Like that. Yeah,
they're constantly updating. In fact, the very first thing that happens with the new version of Army Builder is you go online and it updates all of its army points values. If a new book has come out in the series, if it's not already available, they'll give you a prediction date when that book will be available. Like a new codex comes out for 40K, they'll say that'll be ready in 2 weeks or in a week and a half. So there you go.
Nice. Just real quick before we close up, while Jay was talking, I found the pictures that Smed sent out of the Sandbox MMO. Current day. The picture is, it kind of reminds me of, if I had to take a guess, I'd say any kind of Midwestern little small town, Kansas-y or something like that. It's like you're standing in a field behind a church, and it's kind of your classic white church with the big white steeple. Beside it is a wrought iron kind of pickety fence, a graveyard right beside the church. So, and the other picture is the same scene, but at night. And I found that actually by Googling SOE Sandbox MMO. So you can find that as well. Take a look, see what you think, but it's definitely going to be modern day, so maybe that zombie apocalypse thing isn't too far off.
I can't wait to see it. Like I said, he's always been really respectful of the gamer, so I want to see what he does with it. I'll be glad to put my money in.
Yeah. You know, there are some zombie apocalypse kind of games out, which I haven't tried, but I've wanted to, and like Rust, I think, is one, and DayZ is another.
Yep.
You know, by now there's the stories are out there, man, but DayZ, god dang, I want to try it, but man, the people are just dicks.
Yeah, brutal. They're
the
brutal.
People that play. I mean, I was reading an article in, I think, PC Gamer, and one of the guys, of course, was running the game, and he told his story. I mean, it's just like some of the cruelest backstabbing stuff you've ever seen. Like, you know, you start off in the game as nothing. You have, like, t-shirt and shorts, and that's it. So you have to run around and find, you know, a little bit of weapon. You have to find food and water. You will die if you don't find either one of those. He told a story about he was running through town, one of the towns, and someone ran out from a building, and they kind of just stopped in the middle of the street and saw each other. So they both kind of stood there for a minute, and then they started talking. Oh, hey, yeah, okay, so I'm trying to do that. Well, I'm trying to do this. Well, maybe we can help each other. Well, okay, let's try it out. Now, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead, just think back to, like, season 1 and 2 when they go into a new area and the people, you know, show up. They run into a group of people. Oh, who are you? Guns are drawn. And, oh, what, this is ours. Get out of here. So these two people, the dev, the columnist, and the player, they start running through town, and they find a few things. And he's like, hey, you know what? I saw this. I forget what the guy said. He said he told the author, I saw, like, this dump or storage place or something up on this hill. They're like, oh, let's go check it out. So they go running up there, and when they get up there, the guy has three buddies waiting in ambush. And they step out of the forest and hold the guy at gunpoint and steal all of his stuff. And the columnist is like, hey, I thought we were... And he's like, and they were just like, oh, whatever, noob. And they shoot him and he dies. And I was like, god dang. And that's not the only story. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's not the only story like that. I mean, everything I've read or people have tweeted or whatever, every single story ends like that. You absolutely cannot trust anyone in that game. And that's why I haven't played it, because, man, it would just piss me off. Because, wow. Like I said, you start with absolutely nothing. So when you find a knife, it is a big find. It is a big find. And, I mean, you know, if you come across bottles of water, man, you struck it rich. And then to have... You know, to get stabbed in the back. That's the only reason I haven't tried the game, but I really would like to.
They're going
to
retitle that Newberry or...
Yeah,
the name of this town.
Woodbury, Newberry, yeah.
Woodbury, there it is.
Yeah, it's going to be something crazy, but... who knows? SOE will probably get it right, so we'll see. I'm sure down the road that it will be included on the revised Sony Access Pass. $15 a month, you can play all their games.
Oh, don't get me started on that again.
Oh, hey, man.
Back to my EverQuest.
You know what? That totally off topic and off the wall here. I was thinking about that the other day. So we've talked about it before. You'll be able to play EverQuest 2 when, you know, the Vanguard and all their other games that they're actually canceling.
Yep.
EverQuest next, when it comes out, you'll be able to play. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, that's cool. And then it struck me. Hey, I'll be a subscriber. That means I can play EverQuest 1 on a legacy server.
Oh.
now I'm telling you, even last week, I jumped into EQ1, the redone version of it, and it sucks. I hate it. Yep. But the chant, and granted, you know, the lens of nostalgia is thick and cloudy, but the chance to... maybe jump into original vanilla EverQuest. That's pretty cool. I'm kind of excited about that. I am. I mean, we've talked about it. I loved EverQuest.
EQ. Yeah.
And, I mean, I started, like, June of 99, so the game had been out, like, a month, I think, maybe two. So, you know, I was there in the beginning. I loved it. And the chance to even just try it out on a legacy server, hopefully where they haven't progressed too far into the expansions. I kind of want to do that, so I'm kind of excited about the revamped station access pass, if it'll allow you to do it. I can see them being like, $15 a month, you subscribe to the game, oops, $5 extra for legacy servers.
You know? Do you extend your license option?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Thanks. Alrighty, guys, I guess we're going to wrap it up here. Lucky episode 13. This is, to date, I believe, our longest episode, so hooray!
I'm just glad we didn't have any technical problems, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, the wonders of editing software. No troubles or 15-minute downtimes to be had here. Let's see. Yeah, I know, exactly. So you can find me on Steam and the PlayStation Network, also Raptor, under Teletech 77062. Jay?
You can find me under Jason, J-A-Y-S-Y-N-N. And please do. Like I said, we're always glad to be shot at, so that's fun.
Yeah. You can send us a tweet at Pulse Gamecast, or at Pulse Gamecast, or you can email us at thepulsegamecast@gmail.com. On our outro, Black Lace, who runs the Worthy Opponent podcast here on Holosuite Media, she'll have those deets for you again. We look forward to hearing from you guys. Send us a shout out, and we hope to see you in game.
Y'all have a good one. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at The Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to thepulsegamecast@gmail.com.